I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
Carl, thanks so much. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the great wait almost over. Tomorrow's morning's CPI report looming large, especially large. The Investment Committee debating the road ahead for this rally. Joining me for the hour, Josh Brown, Joe Terranova, Stephanie Link, Brian Belsky, and Rob Seach. We got a full deck and a good one, too. Let's check the markets here. We are lower across the board. Yields are lower, too, as we have this great wait, as I say, almost over, Joe. J.P. Morgan gaming it all out, the CPI. Basically, very cool is good. In line is good. Anything but that, and all bets are off for this market.
It's so binary, and that's a problem for investors. I never like that. I'm going to be looking at rent equivalents and goods to see how those figures come in. But I think when you're looking at this report, you have to ask yourself, where are we on sentiment? Where are we on positioning? I do believe in the last week and a half, we've worked off some of the overbought conditions. I think we've added a little bit of an element of bearishness into the marketplace on the belief that maybe the Federal Reserve is not going to be act as quickly as they can. But I'll tell you this, Scott, as long as NVIDIA and the AI halo continues to trade the way it has since the NVIDIA Woodstock event. Keep in mind that Monday on March 25th, if we have a chart to show this, that was the high. We came in off of Woodstock. We had all that great news, and it's been NVIDIA and the entire AI halo from Cadence Design to AMD to Broadcom that have trended lower. And if that continues, if CPI comes in investors' way tomorrow, okay, if that continues, it's not going to matter because we have to see that little consolidation correction period for these stocks recover and rebound. That matters most.
No room, right, Steph, for a hot CPI after the last reads and how yields have backed up. I know they're down today, but the recent trend has been a little bit of a backup. We're, you know, obviously dealing with what seems to be a little more hawkish tilt on the Fed. What's at stake?
I think that consensus is for 1 to 2 cuts between now and the end of the year. If you get a hot number tomorrow, you're talking about 0 cuts and maybe even introducing a hike, right? Depending on how hot it is. I actually think, though, that the headline is going to be hot because of energy and commodity prices, what we've seen in the last month. So that I'm actually bracing for a hotter number. The number is 3.4% year over year. I think the core actually will be okay. Joe mentioned new tenant rents. That's a big one. That should come down. Used car prices should come down. So I think we'll see a 3.6, 3.7 kind of a number. And just remember, we're down from 9% headline inflation. So we are making progress. We're just not making it fast enough.
Oh, are we binary for the market? If it's not a great report, if it's too hot, does that mean this rally is in serious jeopardy for a little bit?
I think you could, but then I think very quickly we have earnings that come out, and I think earnings are going to be better than expected. Remember, why is inflation hot? We talked about this last week. Inflation is hot because the growth in the economy is stronger than expected. We're running at 2.5% GDP for the first quarter. This is on top of 3.4% all of last year. There's an enormous amount of momentum in the economy.
Yeah, we have above trend
growth.
That's
leading to above trend growth, above trend inflation, but that also does bode well for earnings. And so I do think you're going to see better earnings. I'm in the 8 to 10% camp for this quarter and for the full
year. That's higher than where consensus is now because consensus has come down.
I think you're going to have
about 4 or 5% now. So you're more optimistic than most. Belsky, what's on the line tomorrow morning for this record-setting rally since the October bottom?
I like the way that J.P. Morgan's going about this, saying very hot or very cold. What if it's just kind of hot? I think it could be kind of hot. That could really spook people. And speaking of the binary tone of investors, I don't think a 1 or 2% pullback on low volume the last week or two is enough to call that we've kind of washed out kind of the overbought status. I mean, this market's up a lot. And I think a lot of the easy money's been made. That's why we've turned a little bit more cautious near term. Longer term, we remain super bullish, but we want to buy stocks lower. We want to buy stocks at a little bit more of an attractive price, and I think we're going to get one.
You think the market's a little too far too fast now?
I do.
Seach, what do you think?
Listen, to us, it's all about growth revisions. Growth revisions have been significantly higher. That has lent support to this market. if that rolls over, it could change. If it doesn't roll over, I think any dip that's caused by a hot number tomorrow is going to be bought.
Why do you think that?
Because there's an enormous amount of money on the sidelines in the moment.
You think there still is?
Yes.
I do.
Yes.
There absolutely is. $6.1 trillion, to be exact.
And by the way, animal spirits are picking up. You can feel it in every conversation with clients. That also comes with a little bit of danger, obviously, that that we're buying it at multiples that are really, really high. But valuation, because of the strength of the economy, has almost been thrown out the window, at least here for the near term. You're looking at cyclical sector after cyclical sector that's trading at some very high multiples, two-decade high multiples, right? And yet the market's not paying attention to that.
Well, now you got earnings season, though. Now the rubber has to meet the road. Right? You have multiple expansion. Now you better have earnings to justify the way multiples have expanded, not to mention the fact that higher rates are an impediment to expanding multiples in and of itself.
Totally. And you make a really, really good point. If you look at the Mag 7, and I'm even including Tesla, I'm including Apple, 37% earnings growth year on year. You strip those out of the market, -3 for the rest of the stocks. So, you know, those companies have done well not just because of AI enthusiasm. They've done well because they've delivered from a fundamental standpoint. Not all of them.
Yeah,
again,
but you're talking about cyclical sectors doing well, but those sectors are cheap.
They
XLE
are cheap.
Is
they're
at
super
seven
cheap,
times.
And they have, but they have
the XLE is at 7x forward estimates. Huge free cash flow. It's only 5% of the S&P. Nobody owns it. Everyone's chasing it.
We
now.
Own it. We're overweight.
I'm just saying though that a lot of people don't own it. Mm-hmm. Certainly, growth managers don't. Mm-hmm. Right. That's number one. Number two, financials. You can get great banks for 1.1 times book value. Maybe the best bank in the world at 1.9 times.
But Steph, the question was, what happens to the market? And the market is market cap weighted.
Sure.
And it's market cap weighted with these names that sit at the top that are fundamentally well underpinned. Again, expensive as expensive gets, but fundamentally well underpinned.
So, Josh, what's on the line, do you think, tomorrow? How are you gaming this out for yourself and your view of the market?
I actually would root for a panic, and I'll buy it. Because if you look at the root cause of inflation, it is exactly what Stephanie described. And Rob described. It's coming from a place of economic strength. It's coming from a place of a fundamental situation where people are making more money than ever, not only doing their job, but also when they pop open their Fidelity brokerage account, or they look at their 401k statement, or they see what homes are selling for in their neighborhood, regardless of prevailing mortgage rates. It is a fundamentally incredible time to be living, working, and investing in the United States of America. So if they want to drop the Dow 1,000 points because of a hotter than expected inflation reading, I'm a buyer. It'd be great. I'd rather that, actually. I don't need another 500-point Dow rally on softer than expected. So that's where I am mentally. That's where I've been. And by the way, all this talk about bond yields, blah, 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 let's all remember the average 10-year Treasury yield back to 1926 is 4.8%. That's not my opinion. That's data. That's the average. So half the time it's higher. I don't understand why the 10-year yield has to serve as some sort of warning trigger for risk assets. It never has before.
Only because
we're going to invent a new rule to the game?
No, only because of where expectations were and, you know, relative to where they are now regarding a change in Fed policy. That's all. You could look at the historical averages, you say, and say, well, what's no big whoop? But when, you know, sentiment was driven in part by expectations of rate cuts, if you're resetting that and moving the goalposts like we seem to be from a more hawkish leaning Fed, of late,
I didn't hear one person. I didn't judge. I hear you. I didn't hear one person on the committee today say anything about the need for a rate cut to justify the investments they're currently making. So not one of us.
Bank of America's equity client flows in terms of who's buying dips or where we view the current situation. Outflows continue according to them. Again, we're talking about institutionals, buyers and sellers. They're selling tech, they're selling healthcare. But the bottom line is that when the S&P, this is last week when the S&P was down 1%, clients were net sellers. I mean, there is, Brian, some degree of newly introduced nervousness into this market.
Well, per the prior points in terms of the people that are sitting on cash that have underinvested and missed this move versus the animal spirit part of the market has actually scared those people that have been sitting on the market. So the ones that have been peeling back makes sense. With respect to the Magnificent Seven and what they've done, actually Tesla is number 10. It's not Magnificent Seven anymore. It's Berkshire Hathaway's number 7. I think people don't talk enough about that. But I think in terms of what's happening in the markets, if you take a look at the top 10 performing stocks year to date, 8 of them were the worst performing stocks last year. So we're seeing the same type of trade this year versus last year. The major difference, Scott, though, is the worst performing stocks in 2022 were tech and had this big fundamental tailwind, like an amazing fundamental tailwind. I'm not sure that the 8 out of the 10 best performing stocks, including some energy stocks, have a great fundamental tailwind the next 12 to 18 months.
Well, speaking of mega caps, you know, it is a big day for several of them. Google unveiling a new AI chip today. Amazon's on the verge of a new all-time high. Deirdre Bosa, Kate Rooney following both of those stories. Dee, we're going to start with you with this Alphabet news today.
So, Scott, it all comes down to compute power, costs, and scarcity. Google is on both sides of this Gen AI race. The company itself is developing models and applications, but as a cloud provider, one of the hyperscalers, it also needs to provide compute power to its cloud customers. So AI resources, of which high-end chips are critical, has to be rationed in some way or another, or Google needs to bring in-house custom silicon to reduce reliance on outside vendors like an NVIDIA. So that's exactly what Google and its megacap rivals, by the way, are all doing. Axion is Google's latest expansion into custom chips, which the company says is capable of a range of tasks, from powering Google's search engine to AI-related work. Now, the success of Google's custom chips, it's been at this for some time. So far, it's been mixed. Gen AI darlings like Character.ai and Anthropic, they have used Google TPUs. That's another custom silicon. But Google doesn't provide that full hardware-software stack that NVIDIA, for example, has built and which has helped it retain its dominance. Finally, Scott, there's one chart that I do want to leave you with. Building the right AI infrastructure is not cheap. This is how Alphabet's CapEx has increased over the last few years as it upgrades cloud infrastructure for Gen AI. And part of that is building these custom in-house chips.
Perfect setup for us. Dee, appreciate that. Deirdre Bosa. We're going to get to Kate Rooney in a moment, but let's trade this, guys, because you know what the best performing mega cap tech stock is over the last month, Joe T?
Alphabet.
It's Alphabet. And by a mile.
Alphabet.
By a mile. It's up 16% over the last month.
Look, I began the show talking about the AI underperformance from NVIDIA and some of the other names. But what has been remarkable, and I think it speaks to the resiliency and the need to look past a 20 basis point rise in 10 yields over the last 10 weeks or a rise in crude oil. And to Stephanie's point, the strength of earnings. It speaks to the resilience where you have the ability when one area of mega caps like NVIDIA underperforms, here comes Alphabet, here comes Amazon, here comes Meta, leading the charge higher. And I fail to believe that we are at an inflection point in a market when even if it is NVIDIA and the semis that'll struggle, you have these other names that are making new highs. That has never been indicative of an environment where you have a dramatic inflection point and markets roll over.
I mean, Josh, the stock price action in Alphabet doesn't match what the narrative has certainly turned into. Today, the price target gets raised to 170 from 165 at Cowen on, quote, expect reacceleration at YouTube and the cloud. So this is a significant day, perhaps, for what Alphabet hopes to do in the near future.
It's a really great point you make, Judge. The narrative and the stock price do not agree. So I guess I would respond to that by saying, number one, so how do we feel about narratives when we're investing? You know, I'm not a big fan. I prefer price action, quite frankly. And then I'll find the narrative that makes the most sense to explain it. Rather than, here's my narrative, the share price better agree with me or else. Okay, so that's
well,
where I am with the story.
Look, let me give you the narrative if you'd like it. It's actually a great narrative.
The stock is incredibly cheap relative to the others, trades at 21 times. It's had a 20% month. They've got the second largest large language model, the second largest cloud platform, the largest search business, and they're developing their own chips right now, their own generative AI chips, which their language model was initially slow, but progress is being made. You can see it. And you have NVIDIA, which has an 80% share. That is tough to maintain in an environment where one of your largest customers is trying to compete with you.
Sure, but you know what the narrative was, is that they missed the boat. The reason I suggested the stock price and the narrative not matching up is because the narrative has been largely negative. The stock performance has been largely positive.
Right,
Josh?
In the last month.
Rob's law.
Even longer than that.
Look, the narrative, and by the way, Brad Gerstner, I think, did a really good job laying out the risks of Alphabet and why he no longer wanted to be invested in it in the new AI era. I think he made a very solid point, which is that even if Alphabet is competitive in a land of generative AI, they ain't gonna own the whole thing the way they did with search. And so if you follow that logic, if large language models are the new search engine, quite frankly, Google ain't gonna be Google anymore. I think that's a reasonable take on why to be cautious on the name. But to Rob's point, that's okay because the stock was inexpensive relative to the fundamentals today and is not inherently at risk of some sort of massive disruption. It takes a really long time for us to figure out who's really going to be the long-term winner in AGI. There's just no way to know for sure. Right? We know the players.
Better performing stock over the last 12 months. Alphabet or Microsoft, identical.
And more,
45% each.
And
okay.
And more recent.
If I asked a lot of people that question, I'd say, who's performed better over the last 12 months, Microsoft or Alphabet? I bet you the majority would say, well, of course, Microsoft.
Absolutely.
Not the case.
And without question, from my perspective, and the ownership that we have of Alphabet is related to price, and it's related to momentum. And to me, that's been the strongest factor recently. I understand the fundamental argument that you're making. I understand the valuation argument, the AI inclusion, all of that. But there were questions surrounding this stock in the last 6 to 8 weeks, and there were valid questions. Mm-hmm. It has been price which has driven investors back towards this stock, and now it's going to be encapsulated more momentum funds.
Speaking of price, Amazon, as we said, could close at a new all-time high today. Now we go to Kate Rooney for that setup as we approach a potential milestone here, Kate.
Hey, Scott. Yeah, so new intraday high, at least for Amazon. We have seen a handful of price target increases and calls reaffirming Amazon as one of the street's top picks. Average price target has climbed to $209, about 13%. Upside from where it's trading right now. 95% of the firms out there have a buy rating. Three holds. There are no sell ratings on Amazon. RBC, at least, calls Amazon one of the internet's largest true alpha dogs, thanks to scale and e-commerce combined with its cloud business. And then Jefferies says, still plenty to be excited about, plenty of runway ahead. And then also a topic for Morgan Stanley, which points out better cost to serve and efficiency upside, plus Prime driving some of the recurring revenue, cloud adoption as well, and advertising potential. And while AI, as you guys have been talking about, has been the story of big tech, very few mentions of it as a catalyst for Amazon stock. The big risks to the downside include any sort of AWS decline and then e-commerce competition from Shein and Temu. Scott, back over to you.
Oh, I appreciate that very much from you. Kate Rooney, thank you. Stephanie Link, you own the stock.
Yeah, and I mean, it's had a really good prior year, too, right? It's up 81%, so it actually is a clear standout. I would say there's three ways to win with Amazon. AWS reaccelerates, and that's what we've been seeing. And all the data points show you're going to go something like 12% growth to something like 15, 16% by the end of this year. That's really very powerful. This is the most important business for the company. Retail margins are actually accelerating. I think they could do high single digits, which would be pretty impressive. And then you have advertising, and that is certainly underappreciated. I think the company also has done a much better job in efficiencies and execution. So it's certainly not cheap. And I do not like that there are like 97% of the sell side that have buys on it. That bothers me a little bit. However, the momentum and the fundamentals and the tailwind are absolutely on their side, and I'm going to stay long.
Sell side's positive on all these stocks.
I know.
I mean, they say, Brian, the UBS, the outlook for AI stocks is positive despite recent underperformance. I don't think you're going to find much fight against that, but you have Amazon as well.
We do. Just put AI in the title of a report, and then it can be bullish.
I mean, but, it's worked so far.
But think about it, the importance of Amazon in the consumer discretionary sector, a sector that has had a lot of problems. It's hard to pick stocks in that sector, a lot of volatility in terms of earnings. And with the headwinds surrounding AWS kind of going away the last several months, I think there's a ton of tailwinds coming.
You want to do this? We'll do this now. Let's do some news now that we're getting here. Let's throw up shares of Boeing, if we could. We're going to have more reporting on this from our Phil LeBeau, who follows the story. But let's take a look at the intraday of Boeing, which is dropping. There are reports now from the New York Times that the FAA is investigating whistleblower claims about potential flaws with Boeing's Dreamliner jet. So, you know, a number of issues over the last many weeks with Boeing here, potentially yet another one. Our Phil LeBeau is going to be up in a moment to give us some more context into all of this, but we do have ownership on the desk. So while we wait for Phil, let's kick this around a little bit. Steph, I'm going to come to you first on Boeing, then we'll get back to the technology discussion we're having today, because there's some significant news as it relates to the chips too. But take BA for me here, as the stock's under pressure.
I think you just have to be patient with this. It's not going to change itself overnight. There's a lot of fixes in place. They don't even have a CEO at this point. I mean, they do, but they're getting a new one and they're actively searching. And that is going to be, I think, the next catalyst. We have to get through a lot of these bad headlines. We have to have the stock not go down on bad news anymore. And every time we get these headlines, it goes down. So I'm staying patient. Again, I think, and I speak to the duopoly of Airbus and Boeing and how powerful that is over the long run. But if you have a short-term time frame, you're not going to make a lot of money.
You own it too?
Yeah, we do. You know, if you think about Boeing's place in a value portfolio, I think Boeing, the next 5 years, is going to be the next GE in terms of the turnaround and what it has potential to do in terms of just righting its ship.
So they have the CEO change.
Yep.
At some point, do the number of negative stories overshadow the duopoly? Because that's the principal argument from bulls, longer term bulls like Steph. Now, Jim Labenthal owned the stock, and that was one of his, you know, key principles until he just decided I've had it and sold the stock.
Well, I mean, I think too, we need to see that. Obviously, they've laid out the direction of where this is going from a leadership perspective. They need to get the house in order in terms of all these issues and stop with the issues. And we keep talking about this. This is the end. This is the end. They keep coming up. So there's a huge credibility problem there on a near-term basis, Scott. And this has to end at some point. But you know, when you own it in a value, again, value portfolio, and want to be contrarian, you want to take a little bit of a different take.
Let's bring in Phil LeBeau. Now, Phil, what are we learning here?
We're still waiting to find some kind of confirmation from the FAA regarding an investigation based on the claims from this whistleblower regarding the way in which the fuselage of the Dreamliner, remember, it's a composite fuselage, the way in which the barrels are joined. That's at the heart of the complaints that come from this quality engineer at Boeing. So if the FAA does open an investigation, which would not be surprising, if the FAA opens an investigation, then it raises the question, do they ultimately have to halt production, or is this a case where they say, you know what, we will just go forward with additional inspections of about 980 Dreamliners that are in service around the world? But there's no doubt, when you have a report like this in the New York Times dropping in the middle of the day, the fact is, if you're a Boeing investor, you're looking at this, and understandably, the stock's moving lower. You're looking at this saying, okay, what's next? So at this point, we're waiting to learn a little bit more. Ring the bell. Let me jump off. This is the FAA. Let me talk to them, Phil. And then I'll talk to you guys. You bet.
All right, we appreciate that. That's how reporting goes. Phil, thank you very much for that. All right, so we'll watch for more developments of that. We'll keep our eye on the stock, obviously, down 1 1/3 percent here. Let's move back to the conversation that we were having, because it's also a big day for chip stocks. And I do want to get to this. So you got Intel new chip. You got Applied Materials may postpone or cancel $4 billion in California R&D facility. That's news. Broadcom, Steph, you own that. that. Reiterated overweight, $1,700 is the price target there, at a time when chips, are, I think, are being hotly debated as to whether they've run too far too fast.
I definitely think they have. You know, I've been trimming Broadcom pretty much every week, just a little bit, just to take profits, up 113% in the past year. That being said, this is number two way to play AI, right behind NVIDIA, and it's trading at a much less multiple. And they also have VMware, which I think really is very powerful, really helps their software business and recurring revenues and better margins. And so there's a shot this company could do $70 a share in earnings power in the next 2 years. So I still like it, but I think it's prudent to trim.
You want to give me just 30 seconds each on Applied Materials on this potential postponement or cancellation of this R&D facility out in California?
You know, still think it's an essential chip maker, advanced chips used in AI. It's more cyclical. You know, it's up 28% year to date. I don't think it would be a surprise to see a pause on news like this. It's diversified. It's not that expensive, frankly. It trades at 24 times earnings. So I think you have a margin of safety in terms of the price here to deal with hiccups like this.
All right, let's bounce for a couple minutes. We're going to come back. I've got a new move, or at least an addition to a stock that Stephanie Link owns. I'm going to tell you what that is. We have our calls of the day as well. And, of course, we will await any more potential Boeing news after Phil LeBeau gets off the phone with the FAA. Back after this.
Are you following the Halftime Report podcast? What are you waiting for? Look for us in your favorite podcasting app. Follow the Halftime Podcast now.
All right, we're back to Stephanie Link for more information on that move I told you about. So you bought more GE Vernova, GEV, the spin.
Yeah, well, it was spun out last week, and then it fell 14% in the following 3 days, and I just thought that was egregious. I mean, this is a company. This is Power Wind Electricity, and they actually, their installed base, they actually supply 30% of the world's electricity. This is a real player, we know. And now that they're spun off, you know I like spins, Scott. I like GE Healthcare. I like GE Aviation or Aerospace now, but I like this one a lot because I think it's misunderstood, and I think it's underperformed for so many years. There's margin up. Upside, there's free cash flow generation, very little debt. So I wanted to be bigger, and so now I am.
All right, let's do some calls of the day. Because Josh Nasdaq got upgraded today to overweight, named top pick at Morgan Stanley. Price target goes all the way to $80 from $59. They're bullish on the transformation story. You own the stock.
That's right, Scott. In fact, they upgraded it to overweight and elevated it to top pick, replacing BlackRock, which they're still overweight on, but this is the name. I agree. According to the analysts, they're bullish on the transformation story at NASDAQ as they shift to higher quality recurring revenue streams. So people look at this stock, they look at it as a traditional exchange, which it is, and they think of it transactionally. But the truth is, NASDAQ has been making fintech acquisitions and adding lots of software products to their offerings. And so now the best way to think about it is multiple businesses under one banner. That being said, the big driver here is going to be new listings, in my opinion, in 2024. If you think the IPO calendar is coming back, and I do, NASDAQ is probably one of the cleanest ways to play it in all of the U.S. stock market. So right, I'm long, I love it, and I'm staying here.
All right, let's talk Amex. Downgraded today to equal weight, Joe, from overweight. That's at Barclays. They do bump the target by a dollar, 221 from 220. So we're here, right? We're at 220 now. Reports earnings on the 19th. What do we think about Amex? I mean, I think it's been on the list of those stocks in broad sectors that have been hitting new highs recently.
One of the leading stocks that gave you the advanced knowledge that you would have the broadening out. And this financial company is a company that has managed the balance sheet remarkably well, but it has also benefited from the high-end consumer, the contribution from the high-end consumer. You're seeing the revenue growth and the delivering revenue growth on a consistent basis, not just in the most recent quarter. I think if you go back over the last 3 years, they're growing at 20%. So this is the type of financial company in which you're going to get revenue growth that you're not going to get in the other areas of the market. The last thing I'll say on that is I don't like the downgrade because why don't we wait and see how they're going to report in the middle of the month, see if there's a deceleration.
They're trying to get ahead of it. They're trying to get ahead of it, right? They're worried about revenue coming in worse than expected. They say that explicitly.
I understand that they – okay. I understand they're worried about that. I understand
– we get monthly metrics.
I know. So
the
charge-offs
– small business loans have been really, really strong. So we –
charge-offs were not that – the charge-offs were not that bad. I agree with you. I'm saying that. So why?
Well, you both own it.
We both own it. I guess what I'm arguing for is I like to have the negative news. I want to see the negative news in front of me, the negative reaction subsequent to that, before I tell investors, okay. Let's reduce this position size.
FCX, Freeport, is upgraded at Bank of America. They say it's a stock with, quote, blue chip copper exposure. Target goes to 59. It's about an 18% upside from here. There it is, 51. Stock's up 2% today. Steph, this, I think, if I recall correctly, is a reasonably recent buy.
Yeah. I've been adding it all year, but a couple of weeks ago I added more to it. I mean, obviously, if you think that copper is going to remain strong, which I do, especially global growth improving, then this is a beneficiary. For every 10 cent per pound change in copper, that's $430 million to EBITDA and $350 million to cash flow. And this company has massively reduced debt, and they are generating an enormous amount of free cash flow. So I like it very much. Trades at 9 times EBITDA, historically traded at 20 times. This is not the old Freeport McMoRan.
Brian, you want to give me something on Cisco, which was resumed overweight at Morgan Stanley, $58 price target, and that's a big jump from here.
It is a big jump. They've righted some of the ship here, but we own it in dividend growth in our value. This company is a cash flow juggernaut and continues to pay a large dividend, increasing that. And don't forget about buybacks, but we really like the company longer term.
All right, let's get the headlines now with Seema Modi. Hi, Seema.
Hey, Scott, here's the update. A U.S. appeals court today upheld the EPA's decision to approve California's electric vehicle rules, rejecting a challenge from 17 states and companies that made or sold liquid fuel. In 2022, the EPA restored a waiver that allowed California to set its own electric vehicle sales mandates and car emission limits, reversing a 2019 decision from former President Trump. Israel is buying 40,000 tents ahead of an evacuation of civilians in Rafah, where Israel has vowed to launch an operation to root out Hamas. That's according to Israeli media, though the Israeli Defense Ministry did not confirm the purchase. The Eiffel Tower will be accessorized for the Summer Olympics. A 49-foot-high structure of the Olympic rings will be displayed on the tower overlooking the River Seine. The Eiffel Tower will be a major feature in the Paris Games, with pieces from the tower to be embedded in the medals. Installation will begin at the end of the month. Scott, back to you.
All right, appreciate that, Seema. Thank you very much, Seema Modi. Up next, a big call on big energy. One top firm upgrading that sector today. We'll debate the best way to play it next. Boeing now off the phone, obviously, with the FAA, and we do have a statement, I believe, from Boeing. What do we know now, Phil?
Well, we do know that the FAA is looking into these allegations from a quality engineer at Boeing about the quality and the safety integrity of the fuselage tube, where they are joined for the 787 Dreamliner. Remember, these are composite fuselages. They are joined in a number of areas. And his claims about the quality of where they are joined, that's at the heart of this complaint, which, by the way, and we just got a notice from his attorney, he filed a complaint with the FAA in January of this year. So that's when the whistleblower complaint was first filed. And so with regard to the FAA, they are looking into these claims. Also, we should point out, Scott, that the attorneys and the whistleblower plan to hold a press conference this afternoon. So we're just seeing this, the beginning of this being stirred up. In terms of Boeing, we did reach out to Boeing. It has a statement regarding the claims of the whistleblower. And essentially, it's what you would expect. Boeing denying these claims that the Dreamliner is that they're taking shortcuts to put the Dreamliner together. We are fully confident in the 787 Dreamliner. These claims about the structural integrity of the 787 are inaccurate and do not represent the comprehensive work Boeing has done to ensure the quality and long-term safety of the aircraft. The issues raised have been subject to rigorous engineering examination under FAA oversight. This analysis has validated that these issues do not present any safety concerns. We should point out, Scott, that remember the Dreamliner, they stopped production for much of 2020, all the way up through late 22 to inspect really minute cracks and like smaller than a hair, something you and I couldn't see, and whether or not it represented a structural integrity degrading to a point where it was a safety concern, a flight of safety issue. And in 2022, they made a decision, the FAA did, that the inspections that had been put in place and changes in production, all of that together made the Dreamliner not only safe to continue to fly, but also to once again begin production and deliveries. So we'll see what happens with this claim from a Boeing quality engineer who believes that shortcuts were taken, and then as a whistleblower that he was retaliated against when he brought this to the attention of his superiors at Boeing.
Phil, I think I heard you say in your earlier report that there were some 980 of these planes in operations
Yes.
around the world. Do you know which U.S. airline uses the most of them?
I don't know who uses the most. There are a number of them that are in service with U.S. carriers. United Airlines has Dreamliners that they use. So there are, you know, 980 around the world. And I think, you know, we just got their production and delivery numbers, their order and delivery numbers for March. I think they only delivered two last month. But month to month, deliveries can be kind of lumpy when it comes to the Dreamliner, though they are in the process of increasing production of the Dreamliner. I think they're up to like five per month right now. But there's a sizable backlog there. There is demand around the world for this airplane.
Phil, I appreciate the reporting. Good context, too, on the, you know, at least bit of history regarding this, particular model of airplane made by Boeing. That's Phil LeBeau. Thank you for that. Up next, Mike Santoli. He'll be here with his midday word. Welcome back, our senior markets commentator. Mike Santoli joins us now with his midday word. The great wait almost over.
Yeah, Scott, I mean, you know, by rights, maybe it shouldn't actually have that much significance to CPI tomorrow, but I understand why the market's treating it this way. We're running out of inflation readings that we're going to have before, say, the June Fed meeting. I think that the May CPI is on the morning of the second day of that meeting. So you have to fixate on it because the Fed has sort of become a little too cute about saying they need to see further progress. So I get that in the absence of earnings reports, in the absence of other macro numbers that are really changing the narrative, we're focused on this right now. Market seems to be, you know, typically in a sort of neutral spot all day in the last 3 days, really, testing the entire range of that we carved out on Thursday, 5250 to 5150. The bull has definitely broken stride. The rhythm is not what it was going into, let's say, the end of March, but it doesn't mean that it's necessarily wounded. I feel like, you know, we've seen this market just kind of flatten out for a few weeks the way this has, rotate around, and then sort of rescue itself. We'll see if that's what we have here, if we need really a proper pullback.
It yields down across the curve as well today, so it's not like the creep higher continues into the number, even if there's some level of nervousness about what the REIT's going to be.
That's true, although I would take it, if you just dial it back over the last couple of weeks, what would it mean to be on neutral footing going into CPI? It'd probably be, you know, come back off the top of the range in yields, because there has been that significant move recently. So I'm not sure if I know what to read into that in today's act.
Good points, of course, as always, from Mike Santoli. I'll see you on Closing Bell. Thank you. We had a big call in energy today. Halftime is going to be right back as we trade that sector. Had a call out of Morgan Stanley today by Mike Wilson upgrading energy to overweight. So it was the best performing sector, Joe, last month. Mm-hmm. And it's obviously at the top of a lot of people's lists on areas outside of tech and that continue to do well. What do you make of this call, and what do you make of it now after the sector's run a lot? Crude's run a lot, too.
We continue to maintain an overweight position to energy.
Okay.
This is more a gasoline story in terms of the performance of energy stocks than anything else.
Does that mean I want refiners?
You absolutely want the refiners. Marathon Petroleum performing well year to date. It performed well last year. Phillips 66, Valero all performing well. And it's important to understand that the strength in gasoline, I was out in Las Vegas, I paid 4.25
for unleaded gasoline. So did everyone else in the gas station. No one turned away and said, oh, I'm not paying that price. They're paying the price because, to Stephanie and Josh's point before, the economy is strong. And there's no perfect economic world. So let's not sit here and look at oil at $86 and see gasoline up 30% and say, whoops, we don't want to be in the stock market because oil's going to be a problem. Guess what? Oil might go to $100 before this year's out, and that doesn't mean you sell out of your energy equities or equities overall.
Josh, this is where you really zeroed in the other day, specific to, you know, these charts that you were focused on. It really was the refiners, the Phillips, the Marathons, it's Valero, et cetera.
Yeah, look, I think when most people think of the energy sector, their first instinct is to think XLE, Chevron, Exxon, and with good reason, those are great ways to play it. But from my perspective, there's a lot more happening in energy worthy of investors' attention right now. There are actually, if you look at the median valuation of energy stocks in the S&P 500, this is a bespoke stat, it's actually bigger than the median valuation of the tech stocks in the same index. Most people wouldn't guess that. So there are many mid and large cap ways that you want to play. I prefer the IEO ETF. Look, the thing about energy stocks, Judge, is that they all move together in the end. Some might go up more than others, but if there's a rally in the commodity, pretty much you could throw darts at the sector and make money. So I simplify it. I own the IEO. Maybe Diamondback does better this week. Maybe Conoco does better last week. But overall, the sector is in a bull market, and I want to stay long here.
Speaking of Conoco, Rob, you own that along with EOG, Suncor, CNQ?
Yeah, I mean, we just view these as a hedge against inflation and a hedge against geopolitical events. These companies are all have mid-digit shareholder yields. They're doing mid-digit buybacks. As Steph said early, they trade at 5 to 7 times earnings. And you have the other tailwind that Josh mentioned, which is higher oil prices. And, you know, the market's starting to wake up to that. It was hard to be long these names at the beginning of the year, very hard. And we've been overweight all year, and now it's starting to pay dividends at a time when you need them to.
Steph?
Yeah, I mean, I like SLB, I like Diamondback, I like Exxon. I'm kind of doing like that barbell. Exxon is kind of like my safety dividend play. Diamondback is kind of the real growth, and they've totally changed with the Endeavor acquisition. And now SLB, 14 times for 18% total revenue growth and 25% EBITDA margins. To me, that's a bargain.
I'm putting on my Weiss hat. I'm stirring the pot. I do not like this call. I do not like this call. Sector's 3% of the market. It's up 15%. Two of the top 10 performing stocks in the S&P 500, Marathon and Valero. They have negative earnings growth the next 30%, next 12 months. I don't get it. I like Chesapeake and Small Midland. We own that. I own Phillips in my value, but
you
Chevron
just think
and Exxon.
Well, you think the space has moved too much to make
yes.
this call now?
Yes. Wait, it's too late. It's late.
All the way up to 7 times. You know, you sit in a very dangerous
yes.
seat.
I know.
And I know the group is up 15% year to date, so you don't have to chase it. But it's really only up 16% in the past year. Last year was terrible for
he energy. Prefers to get his energy from the sun in case you haven't noticed. Okay, and I don't know why you're laughing either at the end. Apparently you guys are on this.
High blood pressure from working too hard.
Final trades are next.
That's good.
I'll see you on closing bell, 3 o'clock. Liz Young will be with me, Alex Kantrowitz as well, on this Alphabet News Today and the Dean Evaluation. I'll spot the motor in two. Hope you'll join me then. Josh Brown, what's your final?
NASDAQ going higher.
All right. Rob Seachin.
Alphabet. Betting against them is like betting against Kobe wearing number 24. They're going to adapt.
All right. Brian Belsky.
Spotify. Spotify is to audio what Netflix is to streaming.
Stephanie Link.
Charles Schwab. I think the net interest margins have bottomed, and they have $6 in earnings power.
The Joe T.
Tech resources. That's your way to play gold and copper.
All right. I'll take you through the final hour, and I look forward to that. I'll see you at 3 o'clock. The exchange is now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
A All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company, or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime report disclaimer.